Are you a fan of all things British? Then Anglotopia.net is the website for you. With information on British history, culture, travel, and entertainment, Anglotopia.net is your source for all things British. Read up on the royals, catch up on Doctor Who, or start planning your next trip. And for a limited time, you can even download the free copy of the 101 London Travel Tips ebook. Visit Anglotopia.net today and revel in the best the British Isles has to offer.
They call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. So in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you 2-2-1 be mine?
Hello and welcome to the Baker Street Babes episode 23, and we're joined today by Mattias Boström from Sweden, member of the Baker Street Irregulars, and we're here to talk about new and old Sherlockians. Hello, Mattias.
Hello.
And also here are Taylor, Amy, Maria, and Jen. And myself, I'm Artie. Curly is on hiatus, so sorry that you didn't get a crazy intro from her. It's just me today. Hello, babes.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
It's John Watson's birthday.
Oh, yes, it is.
Or is it?
Maybe.
Or is it?
It might be John Watson's birthday.
Where is that fact from?
It's from the books.
There are two dates. There's an essay that I found online from the Sherlock Peoria.
Okay.
One of the dates is March 31st, and the other date is July the 7th, I think. So
July the 7th is Conan Doyle's death day.
Oh.
Yeah, and I think that's
totally
why.
On March 3rd.
But yeah, happy birthday, John Watson, maybe. We're here today because I chatted to Mattias on Twitter about the topic of new and old Sherlockians. And we had quite the discussion, and then we said, why don't we make a podcast episode of it? So here we are now. We also wanted someone from the Sherlock Holmes Society of London to take part, but both Roger Johnson and Carrie Chandler said, we'd love to do this, but we're both really, really busy this weekend. So they can't be here in person, but they sent us some lovely pointers, which I'm going to use for the discussion. But before we get started, anyone we've ever had on the podcast usually has to become an honorary Baker Street Babe. And to do that, you have to answer some questions. So, Mattias, are you ready?
Okay.
The first question that we ask is, how did you get into Sherlock Holmes?
Well, the first time I read was maybe when I was 10 or 11 or something like that. And, well, I read it as children read other stories. But I got really into Sherlock Holmes probably 1987, something like that. And it's understandable since that was when the Granada TV series with Jeremy Brett was aired on Swedish television. And it was also the 100th celebration of the A Study in Scarlet. So, well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's your favorite story in the canon?
The Red-Headed League.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, because it has both the funny parts. It's so much humor in it, and a very exciting end. I like it because it's one of the most unexpected stories, how it devolves.
Mm-hmm. Right. And do you have a favorite adaptation?
Yes, of course. right now, it's hard to say anything else but and the gang. But of course, I grew up with Jeremy Brett, so it's difficult to say which one of them is the best. But one of them.
I feel you there entirely.
Yeah, it's a really the final problem for me to decide which one of them has won.
Fair dues. If you could take a character from the canon for tea, who would you take for a tea party?
Oh, Yes, that's not an easy one. Actually, I would love to meet Dr. Mortimer in The Hound of the Baskervilles, because I really want to know about his, why he chose that career instead of the one he could have had. I'm really interested to see. And, of course, Dr. Watson, maybe?
Mm-hmm. We all agree.
We do.
I don't know if I really want to meet Sherlock Holmes, because I don't know how to communicate with him, really.
Yeah, and you don't want to know all the things about you, right?
No.
Pretty scary, because you'd take him for a tea party and within 10 seconds he'd tell you your life story.
I was just wanting to have tea with you.
And things you never wanted to know about yourself.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Matthias. You are now an honorary Baker Street Babe.
Yes.
Hooray.
Hooray.
Someone else has just joined us, Sarah. Hello, Sarah. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hello.
Great. Right, okay, so the topic today is old and new Sherlockians, and I think perhaps to start off, because you're in the Baker Street Irregulars as well, but you seem to participate in online fandom as well, and you're about to publish a book and everything, so maybe talk a bit about what your involvement with the Sherlockian world has been like, your bit of a history there, and yeah, we'll take it from there.
Okay. Well, when I became a Sherlockian in 1987, the word Sherlockian was not that known. I mean, you can understand that it has something to do with Sherlock Holmes, but you really had to search hard to find anything about it. I found a few addresses to Sherlock Holmes societies at the end of a Swedish Sherlock Holmes edition. So I just contacted some Sherlock Holmes societies and found out what it was about. And for a long time, the Swedish Sherlock Holmes Society, the Baskerville Hall Club of Sweden, well, it's not official, but unofficial motto was, you should really be Sherlock Holmes to be able to find our society.
Protest.
But there was no internet, and it wasn't that easy to find any things about Sherlockians and Sherlock Holmes societies and Sherlockian theories and all this quasi-academic literature on Sherlock Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I immediately found was so interesting, that was, well, to play the game, find the faults in the errors in Conan Doyle's writing and pretend that Dr. Watson was real and Sherlock Holmes was real, which they were, of course. But
of course they were. I think we all agree.
So, but it was something I had to learn from the beginning. That was the true fact. But I found it so interesting to try solving the mysteries of how many wives Dr. Watson had and where his war wound was placed and so on. So, and it was maybe this kind of teenage interest for me, but I just happened to get to know so many people through it and got so many friends. So normally teenage interests, well, they are just teenage interests. You tend to forget about them and you can get other interests. But I had made so many friends and got such a huge Sherlock Holmes collection in my bookshelves. I'm sitting next to them right now. So they are looking at me.
That's really interesting, because I think it's the same for us as the Baker Street Babes. Because, I mean, we became friends because of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, that's true.
So it is still, in a sense, it still works.
Yeah, and when I visit Sherlock Holmes meetings, either it's in Stockholm or it's in New York or wherever, we don't actually talk that much about Sherlock Holmes. Because we just have an interest in common, which means that we probably will like each other
yeah.
as
yeah.
human beings.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, excellent. That ties in quite neatly with a question that Roger asked in his email. He wonders whether there is really an age gap, or is there an impression that the societies are for older and / or more wealthier people? Do you have an opinion about that? Because I do, but I'd like to let you go first.
I think that when I speak of old and new Sherlockians, it's not an age thing. It's the old definition of a Sherlockian. The old definition was maybe just this theory writing, not always academic, but that kind of Sherlockian who uses the original stories and work from them. But the new Sherlockians, their original thing is the BBC series.
Right.
And I'm not talking about maybe you babes, but but talking about all the Tumblr Sherlockians. Their whole world is the BBC Sherlock world, and I really want them to explore the rest of the Sherlock Holmes world. Of course, read the original stories, but also see Jeremy Brett's series, and both these things are so easy to read and watch for even the new Sherlockians, because I think they will like that too. Then they can go on reading, well, Pastiche, and watch other adaptations. But I think that it's interesting to see if the new Sherlockians will ever go further than that and into the area of the old Sherlockians, the theory writing, the fun things with jokes about 17 steps and which was the stairs up to the apartment on Baker Street, and these small in-jokes. And when they mention the Deerstalker, it's not, well, we all chipped in. Is that the quotation? Yeah. Instead of, it's an ear flap traveling cap, which is what I think of when I hear a Deerstalker.
No, it's a death frisbee.
It's a kind of death frisbee, exactly.
Yeah. So I think, because there is so much fun to be had in the old Sherlockian world. I can say that just because I've had that fun for 25 years, and I know that so many find it quite interesting to be in that world and to do those things. And I just want the new Sherlockians to know about it, that there is more. There is definitely more. And you can have so much fun, for example, when you read the original stories for the third or fourth or fifth time.
Mm-hmm.
And find these small details. Monday this week, I was at the library talking about Sherlock Holmes with a small group of people. And I had read a couple of stories for this meeting, which we were to discuss. And when I read A Scandal in it was actually The Red-Headed League. When I read that, I suddenly realized, why is Sherlock Holmes knocking on John Clay's door? Because if John Clay is the fourth worst criminal, I don't remember the exact quotation, fourth worst criminal in London, fourth smartest, then he really should know the face of Sherlock Holmes.
Hmm.
And I have never thought about that earlier. So every time I read a Sherlock Holmes story, I find new things. And I think that is fun. And I think that maybe, well, not all new Tumblr Sherlockians think that's fun, but maybe some. And I just want them to know that this world, this Sherlockian world, exists.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long answer, but...
yeah, it is very rewarding to not just stick to the one thing.
It definitely is. One of the things that, or well, a couple of things in your answer I'd like to touch on, and that ties in with something that Carrie Chandler from the Sherlock Holmes Society of London,
yeah,
wrote quite a massive email. And two of the things she said, one thing that she's wondering about is how relevant is it to play the game, as you say, as in pretend that Holmes and Watson were real. To what extent do people still do that? And that's a question that is for everyone to answer. And also the changes in the meaning of the word Sherlockian, and that's something that I can definitely attest to as well, because it used to be that Sherlockian was somebody who played the game, And also, Sherlockian was the Americans, whereas Holmesian is the British word. But these days, I've also seen it used to just mean a Holmesian is a fan of the original stories and the Victorian world, and a Sherlockian is a fan of the BBC Sherlock show.
Oh.
Which does make sense, but there's a shift in meaning going on there, and I'm not quite sure where the words are getting pulled.
I feel like the words are somewhat, from what I'm seeing, are somewhat interchangeable at this point, just because obviously the word Sherlock doesn't really have any connotation other than Holmes. Like, it doesn't mean anything else. So
Yeah. From
what I'm seeing, I am seeing a lot of the BBC Tumblr users and everything appropriating it. I also think some serious Holmesians are using it. So I think it's kind of a fluid meaning right now.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wanted to say about what we were just talking about is I think it's interesting to see, like, with the new Sherlockians, how they are entering at the BBC series, but then you're starting to see memes and things that apply some of the new jokes from the BBC series to the canon. You're starting to see some quotes and things show up on pictures from the Brett series or other adaptations, or Conan Doyle quotes sort of floating around. And I'm always really amused to see that they're going backwards in that sense, like entering at a different point, but for some of them ending up at the same place, which I think is also great that it's sending them kind of back to the original.
I'd say it's definitely interesting to see, and it comes out, I think, a lot with where we are in the BBC Sherlock season at the end of Reichenbach. We're at this point where there's all this speculation online about Sebastian Marin.
Mm.
And, you know, a good percentage of the people in that group don't really necessarily even know who that is. And then other people are like, yeah, I wonder who it's going to be that's going to play that part when it comes and how they're going to do it. And I think that's one of the places you see a lot of that crossover, where you start to see who has at least even a vague idea of the original canon versus the people who are purely just BBC Sherlock fans.
And I do think there are a lot of people who do still play the game. Doing the book reviews for the Baker Street Babes, obviously, has been a really interesting experience to see different levels of traditional and non-traditional pastiche, obviously, but I've gotten the distinct impression that there's still a lot of people alive and well who play the game, and even new people coming into it who, I think fan fiction is almost a way of doing that. It's almost a way for people to incorporate the story into their own lives and to sort of do that in a very new and very modern way.
Yeah, and also as for playing the game, I have three words for you. Believe in Sherlock.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For me, that's the prime example of, yes, we are pretending this character was a real person and, you know, that he, well, is not alive and well, but, you know.
Moriarty was real.
He's definitely real.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, so, but that's a very different way of doing that, rather than debating whether Holmes went to Oxford or Cambridge and searching for clues in the stories.
Yeah. Well, the thing has to do with the fact that the BBC used or uses London so much, or, you know, contemporary London, so it is pretty much the city, you know, that you can actually go to and visit, even though, you know, they've changed a few places. But it's essentially, you know, it's set in the real world, as possibly, you know, the books were set in real world Victorian London. So I think it has to do with that. It kind of, you know, it seems really, really real because the modern adaptation is very close to what, you know, real life would be like. It helps definitely to think of the modern Sherlock Holmes to be real. But I was just talking briefly with Artie about that. But for me, growing up with a different Sherlock Holmes, probably the literary Sherlock Holmes, but also going to Meiring to the museum and seeing the statue there. So there was always a Sherlock Holmes figure which seemed real. Because, of course, there were letters addressed to him in the museum as well. I think it's the same thing in London in the museum. So he is kind of a Santa Claus figure. But for me, he is a real character somewhere out there. Not really approachable, but he's kind of real for me personally.
Yeah, what the new series has done, as you said, is make him contemporary, so that for those of us who do play the game and are under the impression that Holmes is real, unlike the Victorian Holmes, it's something real that's now literally happening at the same time that you're alive. During your time period, he becomes a contemporary of you rather than a historical figure who may or may not exist.
But I think that's the division between the quote-unquote old Sherlockians and the quote-unquote new Sherlockians. That's how you enter in the world. I mean, if you go back to Victorian times, when these stories were being written by Arthur Conan Doyle, people thought Sherlock Holmes was real then, too.
They did, because
it was set in that time, because that, you know, it was that period. I mean, Arthur Conan Doyle continually, you know, got letters addressed to Dr. Watson or to Sherlock Holmes. I have a problem. Could you help me out? There's a really great example that I used in that article that a tobacconist wrote wanting to get that paper, that study that Holmes did on however many, you know, types of tobacco ash so that, you know, he had it to read. I think, you know, as you move along in time, you know, and up to now, people might read the Victorian stuff but not be able to connect to it. But because the show does set it in a contemporary time, people can find a tangible way of feeling like this is now, this isn't then. And I think is, you know, part of the bigger difference.
I see people who really enjoy both. They love to believe in Sherlock and figure out how many wives Watson had, but they also like to analyze it from the point of view of Conan Doyle's life. And they can, you know, easily switch between the two, even in a conversation.
Oh, no, most definitely. And I think we as a group are a good example of that.
Yeah, that's also something that Carrie said, that the Sherlock Holmes Society of London was originally a Sherlockian society, i.e. pretending that Doyle was just the literary agent and that Holmes and Watson were real people. And that has an impact on how you run a society like that. She said it took them forever to go to Edinburgh because there were people who were quite vocal about the point of the society being Sherlockian, not Doylean. She said that because the perception of what it means to be a Sherlockian has changed, they have to try and accommodate that and not just assume that everyone is playing the game anymore. Is that something that you've noticed in the societies that you're involved with as well, Matthias?
Well, I don't think we have noticed that much in Sweden yet, but we are getting more and more new members and younger members, but I think we're still playing the traditional game. But since the BBC series is so, everyone likes it among the traditional Sherlockians, so, but we haven't really started quoting from the series and talk about it, well, discussing the theories of what happened at the end of episode 3, season 2. But one thing about the BBC series, which you were pointing out a little bit, is that we are in the same situation right now as the Victorians were in the 1890s, because we can feel it's a real city outside. And the original Sherlock Holmes stories published in the 1890s, they were so really hyper-modern literature among a lot of other books and so on, which were not really that modern. And the BBC Sherlock is hyper-modern television. There are so many saying that among television reviewers and so on, that this is really, really new kind of showing TV. Mm. Well, I didn't really answer the question, but I don't think we have adapted or changed anything in the Sherlock Holmes societies yet, but I think that will come, because I don't think the new Sherlockians has really found their way into the societies yet.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that when the first series of BBC Sherlock was aired, there was a new interest in Sherlock Holmes, but I think the real explosion has come now, second series. Do you think the same, or?
I personally think that when you were talking about the terms and how the terminology is taking kind of a changing meaning, I feel like there's kind of an intimidation there. People who are younger fans who are not 100% familiar with the canon, or even people who have read the canon through once or twice, there's definitely a feeling of intimidation against the older societies. Like, you feel that you're not up on it enough, no matter how much reading you do.
I also think that, I don't think the necessities, you know, is as strictly there as Matthias, as you mentioned, that, you know, you tried, you were looking for something, you were looking for people to talk to about this and to get into this. But I mean, with the internet, you don't have to actually get into societies. You can have, you know, Facebook groups, you use Tumblr, you use Twitter, all of those things you can, you know, use to communicate. So I think just the fact that you were looking for a group of people, for a local group of people to, you know, talk about these things and do research, etc., it has kind of been substituted with the internet, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, uncool to actually go, you know, be part of societies, because it is really, really cool. But I think there might be a reason why people don't search for them as much.
I just recently started a Sherlock Holmes group here in Charleston, and they are all younger girls, they're all BBC Sherlock fans. They're kind of 50-50 on who's read canon and things like that. But I took two of the girls up to Columbia, South Carolina to meet the Holmes Society up there for their dinner. Mm. And they had a traditional dinner with the toast to Irene Adler, and they read 221B at the end of it and everything, which I absolutely adored, and I loved it. And they're like, we would like to come to one of your meetings. And it's kind of hard to be like, well, we'd love for you to come to one of our meetings, but one of our meetings is more like a group of us sitting around a coffee table drinking tea and watching, you know, The Great Mouse Detective. That's more. And I do mean
there
that seriously, because that's what I did on
that.
I know, but that's what I did on Sunday, and it's such a different world. So to be like, to go to one of these very formal dinners where there's toasts and there's food and there's speakers is a lot different from what our little new society has going on, which is just a bunch of people who found each other on Tumblr and meet at a given restaurant or someone's apartment and just hang out, basically. It doesn't have that same formal structure, at least not yet. So, you know, I'd love to have them come down and come to one of our meetings, but it's not what they're thinking when they say, can I come to one of your meetings?
Although they may realize that one of your meetings is going to be different anyway. I mean, with all the, you know, Sherlockians I've been meeting here in New York, you know, between Ash and going to a few events at BSI weekends, I mean, these the people that I, you know, these Sherlockians that I'm meeting, they understand and they get that I was introduced to Sherlock Holmes in a different way. That, you know, I picked up a book, I read canon, I found a Scion group and joined that way. They understand that it was, you know, they'll ask you, how did you get into it? You know, I watched BBC Sherlock and thought, well, if those are based on stories in a book, why don't I go buy the book, you know, and bought the entire canon and started reading it. And they get that. And they're also very welcoming to people. This is, you know, another thing. You talk about younger people being intimidated. I'll freely admit, going to one of those first meetings, I was like, oh God, they're going to start quizzing me, and I'm not going to know the answer to these, and they're going to kick me out, and I'm, you know, and I'm going to shame myself. But that's not the case. I mean,
not at all.
At all, no. And Aubrey, who's part of Sherlock NYC, who's obviously here in the New York area, they started their group with BBC Sherlock, but now they're branching out into introducing canon to younger people. And she even, you know, commented, she's like, oh my God, these guys, they're so welcoming. They really, really want you to come in, and they understand, you know, maybe you haven't read all the stories yet, but they want you to, and they're encouraging, and, you know, they're very welcoming, and people shouldn't feel intimidated, even if they don't, you know, they are fans of Sherlock Holmes, but don't necessarily know everything about him.
I can definitely second that in terms of the Sherlock Holmes Society of London, because we went, I think last weekend or the weekend before, a couple of us went to... Yeah, we went to their meeting. Like, we didn't go to the dinner because that was, like, you know, quite formal and also quite expensive, like, the article. But we went to the meeting afterwards, and everyone was really welcoming. And even before that, Stephen Rothman came down, and we met up with him and a couple of people from the Sherlock Holmes Society in a pub. But I can honestly say that if it had been just me, if I wasn't part of the Baker Street Babes, I would never have plucked up the courage to go to that society. So now that I've been there and I've seen them, and they've all been really nice and really welcome, and we had such an amazing time, and everyone was like, oh my god, good to see you, and you know, really nice, and really like, oh, you're younger people who like Sherlock Holmes, well, that's nice, we really want you to stay, because we need, you know, younger people in the society, but I think the sense of intimidation is still there. So if, you know, this podcast can convince a couple of our listeners that the old Sherlockian societies, are not actually that intimidating, and to just go and turn up, then that's
what my whole experience in Colombia was like that. The Handsome Wheel Society up there, we went up there, and I was still kind of nervous even. But I got up there, and they were just so outrageously excited that we were there. That it was just a wonderful welcome. It's not at all what you expect. You kind of are a little afraid. You think you're going to be kind of kept on the outskirts. It's not, at least I personally haven't had that experience at all.
I think that the whole new fandom is the most vitalizing thing that has happened to the Sherlockian world for ages. And I think that this is something that all the Sherlockian societies, the old Sherlockian society, know about. They feel the same thing, and which you point out with the Sherlock Holmes Society of London, for example, there has been a lack of new, younger members during the last 15, 20 years. I mean, there was a lot of new members when the Granada series was aired on television, but that was sort of the same thing. People had only seen the Jeremy Brett Sherlock Holmes, and really not read the original stories. So it's happening again with Benedict Cumberbatch, but partly in a little different way because we have internet.
Also, I think it's different because, to me, Jeremy Brett is very much as close to the canon as you can get in a filmed version, whereas the BBC show does a completely different thing. So there's a difference there. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, but there was, well, not that big, but there was a fandom formed around Jeremy Brett, too. I remember, at least in the first years when there was the internet, there was a lot of groups concentrated on Jeremy Brett and discussions about Jeremy Brett. I remember those discussion groups on internet. There was the Hounds of the Internet, which was very much around everything Sherlockian, but there was also something about Jeremy Brett, I think, and there was the Mary Russell group, which was also a sort of fandom.
I just want to put in, all this is really making me wonder about what the changing face of Sherlock Holmes societies is going to be in the next few years. Because obviously we don't know where the BBC series is headed or what the longevity of the series is beyond Series 3. But, you know, things are bound to change when you have an influx of virtually thousands to millions of suddenly young people entering a fandom. And obviously they won't all stick around and become, you know, dedicated Sherlockians, but I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens when basically two worlds collide. You have what Taylor was talking about, where you have the world of the formality, and it's very fun and it's very welcoming, but it's obviously very different from how the internet generation relates in a sort of informal kind of hanging out kind of way. And I'm curious what the end result is going to be of sort of the combustion of those two worlds, whether one is going to predominate in the end or if we're going to get something that's a mixture of the two. So I'd love to see where that goes even in the next few years.
Yeah, definitely. And something that Roger wrote to me said, this is so beautiful, I'm just going to read it out. He said, the Sherlockian world as a whole needs the energy, the new ideas, and the fresh perspectives that youth can bring just as much as it needs the experience, the judgment, and the accumulated knowledge that sometimes come with age. But are we doing enough to encourage the new Sherlockians to stay?
Yeah, the basic question is, do the new Sherlockians know about the old Sherlockians? And if they know about them, are they afraid of or not interested in joining them? And I think that you, for example, you babes, have an important mission here to try combining these two groups of Sherlockians and many more of us and all the traditional Sherlockian societies. Why not arranging Sherlock Holmes days where you put on a couple of speakers and not just about how many wives Watson had, but some official arrangements which anyone can. That could be a task for a lot of the local Sherlock Holmes societies in combination with libraries or whatever. So, because I notice when I'm out and speaking about Sherlock Holmes, there are a lot of younger people coming to these lectures, and they mainly know about the BBC Sherlock series, but that makes them come anyway. Yeah. So I think that we have to help them with enlarging their interest if they want to, and showing them how much more there is in this society and Sherlockian world.
But do you also think that it's necessary to build a bridge the other way? Like Taylor was saying, those, what's your Hands on Wheels, or what are they called?
They're called the Handsome Wheels Society.
Handsome Wheels, yeah. They said, can we come to one of your meetings? And, yeah. They find out that it's basically people hanging around at someone's...
It's a meetup.
And,
yeah.
Watching Great Mouse Detective, or like the meetups that we do in London, or goodness but, knows where, you just put a time and a place on the internet and people show up.
Yeah, but that's a little bit like what we do in Sweden here in Stockholm. We have these, it's called meetings, but it's just meetups at a pub or something like that. It's not that formal every time. So I think that depends on which local society or so on that you are visiting and how traditional they are. But I think definitely there are ways to build a bridge the other way. And I think we need to do that too. But there are always some people in the among the older traditional Sherlockians that are interested in coming to these meetups because they like everything Sherlockian.
Mm. Hmm. Well, I think that's the important point too. I mean, no matter what group you're a part of, or if, you know, you're the, you know, the older Sherlockian groups that want to go to a new group or vice versa, you've all got one thing in common, and it's the fact that you enjoy Sherlock Holmes. And I think that that's what makes Sherlockians great all around, is that we all love Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. And that's what it simply comes down to.
And the new, and the BBC's Sherlock, that is so true to the real Sherlock Holmes. I mean, the characters and the plots and, well, so many things in the BBC Sherlock is so true to what Conan Doyle originally wrote.
Yeah.
We like the same Sherlock Holmes, but we don't really know about it.
I was just going to say, going back to the idea of the meetups versus the formal meetings, I think this is happening in every area of interest that people have, because I've totally seen it in my knitting group. Our older members, it drives them insane that for us younger people, it's more like, oh, you know, we'll send you a text message or we'll put it on the internet with a couple of hours to spare. You know, we're going to be here at this time, this place. And for the older members, it's like they come from a world without that kind of instant communication, and it's sometimes hard for them to adjust to the informality of that, because, you know, they want a schedule like 6 months in advance. When are we meeting? Where are we meeting? Exactly what are we doing? And it frustrates them so much sometimes, and I think as younger people, we sometimes have to remember we need to build that bridge both ways, where we say, okay, we relate in a different way, we communicate in a different way, but maybe we can adapt that to be a little more friendly to the needs of those that didn't grow up in the same world that we grew up in, basically.
Mm. I think one way to start, if you are interested in knowing just a little bit more about what's more than the BBC Sherlock, start, for example, with Stephen Doyle's Sherlock Holmes for Dummies. That is actually a really good book. About, I mean, Stephen Doyle is one of the Baker Street regulars. And
part of
I
the
mean,
Baker Street Journal, which is our
yes,
what
of course.
Call it,
yeah.
Sponsor.
There yeah. You get a little bit of everything in that book. So Sherlock Holmes for Dummies is a good book. I like that. And it gives you a short introduction to all the different parts of the Sherlock Holmes world, the original stories, the London of Sherlock Holmes, pastiches and parodies, the films, TV series, the Sherlockian societies, the different theories, these quasi-academic theories, and so on. So I think you have to start somewhere, and why not with a book?
Sound advice. One thing that we kind of touched on, but that I just want to wrap up a bit more is there a difference in the ways that people enter fandom that is coloured by who first embodied Sherlock Holmes for them? I was just talking with Maria before the podcast, and Maria said the first physical Sherlock Holmes I met was a statue in Meiring, and that'll be forever my physical incarnation of Sherlock Holmes. For me, it's Jeremy Brett. And then there is a very select group who saw Douglas Wilmer in the 60s. And those, yeah, I mentioned that as a specific group because those films are very hard to come by. There was a limited video release. There are DVDs floating around somewhere in the US. Maybe you're lucky and you can buy them, but there's no word on a UK release, so it's very much a thing of you had to be there, and you only have, if you haven't seen it, and it's very hard to come by, if you haven't seen it, you only have the word of the people who did see it as to how good it actually was. So they'll be like, oh yeah, it was amazing. And you can sit there and smile and nod, but you really have no access to that world. So do you think there are differences because of that? And what's the impact of it, do you think?
I think that each generation or each time has or needs its own Sherlock Holmes, which depends on the trends in society how people are for the moment. What should I say? So at the moment, we really need this BBC Sherlock because it's not nostalgic or anything. It's just modern. But in the 80s, we maybe needed the more nostalgic or more original version of Sherlock Holmes, because then we had in the 70s all these parody versions and all the different kinds of Sherlock Holmes in New York and with Roger Moore and so on. So we always need a new kind of Sherlock Holmes, and if we don't need the modern version, we maybe need the parallel Holmes, which is Robert Downey Jr., which is more the old kind of matinee star and sort of steampunk Sherlock Holmes.
That's a good point, I think.
And in the 60s, they needed another kind of Sherlock Holmes, and in the 40s, they needed Basil Rathbone. So I think it's hard to say that what's really good from the past, because it depends on the society around it.
I think it's interesting, the differing opinions. Like, I read Sherlock Holmes when I was really young, so I read it long before I was aware of any other Sherlock Holmes media. I am old enough that there was not internet readily available at that time. And so any Sherlock Holmes I watch after that, I'm measuring them up more against, I guess, my own Sherlock Holmes or the Sherlock Holmes I saw in my mind. And I find it really interesting to relate with people who did come into it just with the BBC series, who that is their Holmes. So if they go back and read the canon now, they sort of measure the canon against what they've seen. And I think that's a really different experience than somebody who went into it with a canon first, at least in my own experience.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd like to say something to sort of connect what Hines just said to what Taylor was saying earlier about the Sherlockian society. Like he said, every generation sort of gets their own Sherlock Holmes is what you need. And I see a lot of people saying, well, if you like the Guy Ritchie movies, you aren't a real Sherlockian, or you're not a real Sherlockian if you haven't read the entire canon. And that's just ridiculous. Like Taylor said, the people who are actually BSI members and ASH members aren't taking that attitude. So, you know, whatever Sherlock Holmes you like is your Holmes.
Right. Well, it's just a matter of that you love Sherlock Holmes.
I don't think it matters which Sherlock Holmes you like. I mean, I love the Guy Ritchie films. I think they are great fun. And I also think it's kind of nice that Hollywood has done these films for us Sherlockians to see. Well, I mean, there has always been this kind of parallel Holmes, because already in the 1890s there were parodies and other authors writing about Sherlock Holmes, and even the Sherlockians themselves are making fun of Holmes. I think that since we are making fun of Holmes and making fun with Holmes ourselves, one of my absolute favorite films about Sherlock Holmes is What Without a Clue.
I love
with
that, yeah. Absolutely.
Ben Kingsley and Michael Caine. And that is, well, way out when you think about what it really is about.
It does a similar thing to the Ritchie film, though, in that it like completely subverts the canon and takes this whole playing the game and Watson being the unreliable narrator to a whole new level. Yeah. That's what I sometimes think when people say that the Guy Ritchie film isn't Holmes for them, and I just kind of look at them and go, well, yeah, that is the point. That is the whole point of it. Like, do you not get it?
What I really don't like is, for example, I saw a play recently where it was about Sherlock Holmes, but they didn't really care about Sherlock Holmes. They had just taken the cliches and made a play. And it was so not interesting at all. And it can be how true to the original as it will, but if there is no love in it, not a love story, but love for Sherlock Holmes, I don't like it, because it's quite boring. And some of the most true adaptations that have been through the 20th century, they are actually quite boring, because there isn't that little extra thing about it. You have to play, you have to have some fun with Sherlock Holmes, even if it's very true to the original. Because I mean, Conan Doyle himself had fun with Sherlock Holmes. You can't take too seriously.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree that it's much more interesting for everybody if, you know, the making fun is made out of love for, you know, the actual characters and for the stories. Because that will automatically, I mean, I think it just shows if something is made with love. And if it's, you know, if it's just spiteful, then it's just not comfortable and not, you know, nice for anyone to look at. So I think all of the satires that we have and the funny versions of it, they are funny to us because they're, you know, still made with love.
Has anyone of you seen there's a YouTube clip, What's Up Holmes?
Yes.
It's a rap. I love it. And I mean, it's not nice to Holmes or Watson or so, but it's so much fun. And I think Sherlockians feel a little bit privileged when someone takes the Sherlock Holmes character and does something more with it.
Yeah,
definitely. I think that's also where things like fan fiction and fan art and that whole thing comes in, which is quite different from playing the game. As Laurie King said, I think, in an interview, that she and Les Klinger, they do some events together, but they have a very different approach to the canon. Like, his is, you take it and you write footnotes about it, and hers is, you take it and run, basically, and, you know, play within the world and make up the story within the universe. Is that something that maybe creates a divide, or do you think that those two sides are talking to each other, or could be talking more to each other, or I don't know. What do you think?
You mean Yeah. What should I think about that? I think, I mean, both things are Sherlock Holmes. And I know a lot of Sherlockian friends of mine, some of them don't like pastiche at all, Sherlock Holmes pastiche. They just read the original stories, and I think that's okay. I really don't read that much pastiche myself, but I have a lot of it in my bookshelves. But that is another question. So, but I don't dislike it, but there is so much being published, so I can't read it all. You can do whatever you like with Sherlock Holmes, just as long as you aren't boring with it.
Yeah, well, I think it comes down to, for one, to personal taste. And, yeah, the other thing that you mentioned is not even to, you know, not be boring with it, but to just accept that everybody else has different approaches to it, and just not be, you know, not be all elitist and be like, oh, you know, you like, you know, things that are not canon and are not, you know, what Doyle wrote, so the purists or whatever. I mean, they can, you know, they can like the stories and nothing else if they want to, but I think it's just wrong to, you know, kind of be elitist or something about the entire thing, because everybody can do with Holmes what they want, and everyone can like the version of Holmes that they like, so that's important.
Well, I think, didn't we have a question come through on the Baker Street Babes Facebook about what the difference is between fan fiction and pastiche? And I remember we had a long conversation about that, because that's very hard, honestly, it's very hard to define. And I think, you know, when you try to make hard lines on stuff like that, you make artificial distinctions, because it really does come down to personal taste and what works for you. I mean, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Sherlock Holmes put into paranormal situations, mm-hmm. but I just read Shadowfall by Tracy Revels, and can I just say that book was actually really fantastic. And so it expanded my viewpoint of what, you know, what Sherlock Holmes can be. And basically, like you guys were saying, as long as it's not boring and it's well done, go for it. Because I think Laurie R. King is an amazing example of someone who has broached so many things that were, you know, beyond the pale, and yet she's so popular and she's been so successful because it's the heart of it. It's the love that she has for the character and for the universe that, you know, shines through, and it's like it doesn't matter how far it goes in one sense because she's true to the spirit of it. And I feel like that's the important thing.
All right, perfect. I've pretty much run out of questions to ask and things to say, but I think we've covered new and old Sherlockians pretty well in this podcast. So I'd just like to say thank you very, very much, Matthias.
Yeah, thank you for letting me be a guest and be and making me an honorary babe.
You can put BSB after your name, that one.
Yeah. I just want to say that I love all the new fan vids, especially the fan vids and the fan art and the fanfic, and I think this is a new era for Sherlockians, which is coming, and even if the BBC Sherlock ends, I hope this new generation of Sherlockians will stay Sherlockian in their heart.
Yeah. Nicely said.
Yeah, those are great, nice words. And I'd just like to say, well, for the older generation, we young ones really aren't that scary. And for the young ones, your local Scion Society probably isn't that scary either. So if you always wanted to go but never had the courage to, just do it. Just trust us.
Check it out. Awesome.
Thank you all for coming.
Hooray!
Thank you. And I'll give you more reports about my book writing further on. It's a non-fiction book about the Sherlock Holmes success story, or what should we say, 125 years of Sherlock Holmes, and it will be out in Swedish, published in Swedish during 2013, and I really hope it will be translated.
Ah, excellent.
There will be at least one chapter about the new fandom, which is so important, because my book will be about the people and the events and so on that have formed Sherlock Holmes and made him a success story even now.
Excellent.
It was nice chatting with you.
Likewise, likewise.
Yes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. Bye.
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 If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you two be mine?
The Baker Street Babes would like to thank their sponsor, the Baker Street Journal, the publication of the Baker Street Irregulars. Wow, lots of Baker Street there. Anywho, started in 1946, the Baker Street Journal produces 4 issues a year in the spring, summer, autumn, and winter, plus a year-end Christmas annual. As founder of the Baker Street Irregulars, Christopher Morley said, "Never has so much been written by so many for so few." It publishes essays and scholarship on the characters and stories from the perspective that they are history, not fiction. And let's be all honest, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. John Watson are definitely real. But it is also more than that. It publishes reviews, covers pop culture manifestations between film, radio, and TV, there's plenty to talk about, and the Baker Street Irregulars. And you don't need to be a member of the Baker Street Irregulars to either subscribe to the periodical or even contribute your own article. For more information, go to www.bakerstreetjournal.com. Thank you very much.